Thank you very much for allowing us to come and present this ministry to you. I believe the last time we were here was about 5 years ago, so it was quite a long time. And forgive me for my southern accent, because it's an accent from the south of France, where I was born and I was raised as well. But Anne, my wife, is from Asheville, North Carolina, and we have been commended to the ministry by the Asheville Gospel Chapel. So anyways, tonight we will be showing, we'll start with a video clip to present the needs of France. And this has been done by the children of some of our co-workers. So it's quite interesting because you will see some black and white frames and some colors, and so it's quite interesting how they view the spiritual condition of France. Then we will go move on to present the ministry by the means of a PowerPoint. So, but let's view the video. It's about 6 minutes long.
Baptisé, ça n'a pas de sens. bien l'éducation religieuse quand même, parce que c'est sympa, ça pose des bons trucs pour les enfants. Il y a des morales, choses comme ça. Ben, moi, je voyais ça un peu comme les fables de La Fontaine.
J'ai partagé pendant mon enfance dans toutes ces histoires de religion. Je m'en suis débarrassé fort heureusement.
Mais tout le temps, on a cru qu'il y avait des dieux en Égypte. On faisait des sacrifices, on faisait des centaines de dieux. Ils n'ont jamais existé non plus.
Je ne vois pas trop quoi dire sur Jésus. Je sais pas, c'est de être un meneur, un truc comme ça. C'est clair que la religion peut éviter les gens qui font des conneries, quoi. Mais... je sais pas, c'est aussi avec du bon sens, les amis aussi. J'y crois pas.
L'évangile, c'est la parole de... je sais pas, l'évangile, je... Je sais pas.
Je suis catholique, mais... je suis pas croyant.
Jésus,
c'est un symbole, quoi. C'est un symbole de la paix.
Je sais pas. Catholique, Jésus fait partie de l'histoire de la religion.
C'est des croyances. Après, s'il y a des gens qui se raccrochent à ça, tant mieux.
So you have noted some of the statistics there. Less than 1% are born again believers in France. But we'll go on and about some facts about France. There are about 65 million people of French people, and France, of course, is in Western Europe, right here. And you have Spain not far away, Italy, Germany is here. France has a very highly sophisticated culture, and which is 2,000 years old almost. The French has a very independent spirit, and France has very high diplomatic activity. And very often times you hear in the news that France is a pain in the neck of America. And it's about the size of the state of Texas. And I believe we could put maybe about 17 France in all of the states. And France is known, of course, for its French cooks and the French cuisine. And I don't know if you can see it here, but there's a platter of cheese. And in France, there are about 400 different types of cheese. And I would say that what I miss the most, people ask me, what do you miss the most? I would say that's the French cheese. But, you know, the General de Gaulle used to say, you know, how do you want to govern a country with 400 different cheeses, types of cheeses? But it shows you the way the French mentality. And France is also a beautiful land, a land with beautiful castles. And one of the things you want to visit is go to the Loire Valley and visit Chambord, the beautiful chateau, and Chenonceau, a chateau of the Loire River, and also Blois, and a lot of other castles. France is also land with beautiful churches, and this is Notre Dame of Paris. And so you can see that there are people here they come for concerts, but in most of the churches, most of the Catholic churches in France are largely emptied. And why preaching the gospel in France? Because there are still about 35,000 towns and villages without any evangelical witness. Even though there has been a lot of progress over the last 30 years, we have been 30 years in ministry and we've seen progress. Maybe 2,000, more than 2,000 evangelical churches. And the goal is to reach, to have one church for every 10,000 inhabitants in France. And right now, we have probably one for every 30,000 people. There are less than 1% born-again believers. On the video, you could see that it's 0.6%. And that's probably maybe 600,000 people out of the 1,700,000 Protestants who come, who go regularly to church. Also, there are probably between 8 and 10% Muslim people in France, which makes Islam the second religion in France. Those are probably second or third generation Muslim people coming. They are the sons and daughters of people who have been emigrating, who have emigrated in France from North Africa, from Algeria, Tunisia. And so they are, it's a cultural cultural Islam. And so they are not, extremists, even though sometimes we could have extremist people who commit, they would bomb or would commit all kind of exactions. But most of the French people would be atheists. Actually, if you would be a French man, you may have 252 neighbors, and we cannot, and among them, 36 will be church-going Catholics. Catholicism used to be the first religion in France, but I used to say 30 years ago that 85% claim to be Catholic, but now it's just maybe six, even less than 6% that claim to be Catholic. Four out of the 252 would be non-practicing Protestant, two would be Buddhists, three members of the sect, three Jews, one church-going Protestant, and 17 Muslim people. But most of all, 186 French people will be without any religious connection at all. So most of the French will be agnostic. They don't believe in God. They may believe in a force out there. Maybe at best, maybe he has created the worlds. But it's not a personal God. However, a new church is being planted in France every 10 days. That makes about 35 per year. When you say every 10 days, it sounds a lot, but it's nothing compared to the population, 65 million people. But still, you know, among them, there will be maybe 100 assemblies, and there will be also 100 close brethren, and maybe 100 other assemblies that would be New Testament principal assemblies. So 300 assemblies with New Testament principles is not very many. So the need, the basic need is church planting in France, starting churches. We have been ministering in church planting for 30 years, since 84, actually. And we have been ministering in this region of Grenoble. Grenoble is the capital city of the Alps, with a population of almost 500,000, and part of a larger area of more than 1 million people. So Grenoble is a very old city, dated back to the Romans, actually, and there were Roman settlements there. And I've been raised and born in this area. You can see the snow-capped mountains here. But, you know, I was 16, and I was wondering what was the purpose of in life. Because as a French man, you're raised and they tell you that God does not exist, and you're just a product of evolution, and one day you were born, and then you go through life, you struggle, and then one day you will die, and that's it. That's why they say you have to try to find a purpose for your existence. And those were called the existentialists, like Albert Camus and Jean-Paul Sartre. But, you know, as a 16 years old, I was wondering, is that possible that one day I will die and there's nothing? And I had this premonition, I would say, that no, that's not true. There must be something after death. Of course, later on, when I read the Bible in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 10, I read that God has made everything beautiful, and even he has put in the heart of man the thoughts of eternity, that is, this ability to conceive what transcends ourselves. And this is why I thought that, I believe that, no, God must exist. But also, you know, I was wondering, I knew that God existed, but I didn't know how to get in touch with God. So in his mercy, God sent a missionary to me. And he just came to my home, nearby my home, and he talked to us about Jesus Christ. And we were a bunch of young people who committed their lives to Christ. And I was 16, and that's the way I came to know the Lord in this area of Grenoble. It's part of a greater area of more than 1 million people. And we, in our 30 years of ministry, we did work in camp ministry and helping an assembly in the town of Brignoux. We were there about, what, seven or, I don't recall, a number of years, almost 10 years, actually. Then we worked in the assembly of Waron. And then we worked in the assembly of Pont-Beauvoisin. And there there is now a small group of believers, about 50 people. And we are meeting in a public rental, a place that we are renting. And then we finish this assignment, and then we are maybe looking be part of a team, a church planting team, in the town of Chambéry, which is located north of this area. But there are seven other assemblies in the Grenoble area, and there are also two new projects. And so the assemblies have been quite successful in this area, and the recipe for this has been a very good vision for church planting, and also a good strategy consisting in daughtering churches. And the church would grow, for example, 200 people, and then a group of 50 would come in a new location, and they would start a new church plant. So this is what they have been doing in the area of Grenoble. But in some instances, we've started the church from scratch. But there has been aggressive evangelism and also a very purposeful discipleship and leadership program with a lot of work and a lot of also prayers. So the Lord has been working in this area of Grenoble. And here are a few pictures of the countryside where we lived these last 4 years and where we started an assembly in a semi-rural area. And so this was in the town. This is in the town of Pont-Beauvoisin. It's a small town, about 5,000 people, surrounded with a number of other towns of 1,000, 2,000 people. And the whole area, there are probably 60,000 people. And we are in the process of purchasing this. I don't know, we don't see it very well, but this is a big house here where there will be... We will use it as a meeting place. And so this is a very, it's always a very challenge to find a meeting room, a meeting place in France, because they are all kind of, because a meeting place will give you visibility, it will give you also credibility, but it's also a challenge of faith. But and also we tried, we have been trying to have a meeting place to find a meeting place for the last few years, and each time there will be a problem, like a zoning problem, or would be too expensive, or there will be other issues. And in that case, there was some kind of issue about we were proposing less. We are buying this from the Red Cross, by the way, and this was written in their books for a certain price, and we were proposing less, which they accepted. But the problem is that there was kind of a blockage at the national level. So we did really want to, we did pray for that, and then we went to see the mayor and asked him if we could, the mayor of the town, asked him if he could do something because it was kind of a legal matter. So the mayor said, well, we cannot get involved in this, but I want to tell you that you are welcome in our town. So that was good to hear. But eventually we received a letter saying that what was blocking has been lifted up. So now they are in the process of buying this property. Starting a new church plant. And people ask us, how do you do it? And what do you do? Where do you start? So the Bible compares the believers to a spiritual house. And we'll read this in Peter. You also, as living stones, are being built up as a spiritual house for a holy priesthood to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. Certainly the ultimate goal of the church is worshiping God. And we all know those verses in Psalm 127, which says that unless the Lord builds the house, the laborers in vain, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman keeps awake in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to retire late, to eat the bread of painful labor, for he gives to his beloved even in his sleep. So this is a very good thought to know that this is the Lord that builds his church, because who builds his church, because sometimes it's not very easy. We all know also those verses in Matthew 16 when Jesus is questioning his disciples and he asks, but who are they saying, who do people say that the Son of Man is? And they said, some said John the Baptist and others Elijah, but still others Jeremiah or some of the prophets. He said to them, but who do you say that I am? And Simon Peter answered and said, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus answered and said to him, blessed are you, Simon Barjona, because flesh and blood did not reveal this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I also say that to you that you are Peter, Petros, and upon this rock, Petra, I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not overpower it. Of course, Jesus here was playing on words, Peter and Petra, and we know that the stone on which the church is built is the confession of faith of every believer. You are the Christ. So we know also that Jesus is the head of the church, and we are the members of the body, and we know those verses in Colossians 1:18. He's also head of the body, the church, and he is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, so that he himself might come to have first place in everything. So now, if we compare the physical place where Christians meet to a house or a household, one thing we may ask ourselves is, to what would these three locations correspond? For example, what would the hall, the entry hall, would correspond to? Or what would be the living room? And what would be also the kitchen? And, of course, we would invite people through the hallway and probably we won't take them right away to the kitchen, even though in America it's what you do. Sometimes you will have friends and you bring them in and you would tell them, well, let's have a cup of coffee in the kitchen. But in my home, my mother would never allow anybody in her kitchen. But this is the idea, you know. How do you reach out? You know, what would be the route by which you will take the people? And of course, there are no bedrooms in this house. Sorry. Well, the first thing is we have to realize that there is a big ditch, a cultural ditch, a ditch of the cultural gap. We know that people are important to the heart of God and are lost because of their sin. And this the sin is what makes this big gap between us and God. And yet they need Christ. And but today, they are very far from understanding their need of salvation. And they need answers to their questions and pull down their prejudices. And you can see here there's a wall that represents their prejudices. And yet they are in need of a community, but also a need of a spiritual family. And they also need cultural relevance. This is a second ditch. Very often times we see that there's a big ditch between the church and the people. And so they need time to make the switch. So let's go through those different rooms, and I will just show you what we do, you know, in our ministry. The entry hall. This is a place to greet people. This is a place which is open to all, and it's a place for fun. This is the first contact that people will have with you. It is for visitors. From the point of view of relationship, it's very formal. It's conventional. And the purpose you would have is to change the bad presupposition of people about the church. Because, I don't know if you can see this man, but he's got antennas on his head. And sometimes we look like Martians to people from the outside, the outsiders. And we have a hard time relating to them because of the language we are using or simply because of what we are doing. But we want to communicate to them that we love them, we want them to come and to visit us. And we want them to be part of our family. And we want them to find this refuge. So we invite them through this entry hall. So what are the entry hall that we found ourselves? Well, we have chosen a number of varieties to invite people to the church, like drama or music, special ceremonies, baptism, presentation of children, concerts, meals. We've all kind of celebrations like Christmas plays or Valentine meals. We did a lot of things like that. We did a lot of what we call pre-evangelism to introduce people to Christian values and ethics, and we did this, what we call the Gospel Forum. And we organized a full day. And once we did have a theme like with a question, is God green? People are very much interested in ecology in Europe. And so we had a conference speaker speaking about that and how we have the responsibility to conserve energy and to take care of our environment. And we have also concerts, and we have a full day of activities to present the gospel to people. We do also direct evangelism. Very rarely door to door, but we have done distribution in the streets, one to one witness or cookout, wonderful way to reach out people. We've done a lot of music concerts as well. But most of all, we try to make friends. And I want to present to you Alan and Natalie here. They visited us here in the States about two years ago. We were here during the summertime. But those people are the type of people, you know, we have been spending a lot of time with. Anna was an orphan, and he had a very terrible history. His dad was, he never knew his dad, but he had problems with alcoholism, with all kind of issues. And Natalie, his wife, also was coming from a very difficult background. Her dad actually was a murderer. Spent a lot of time in jails. And so Anne spent a lot of time with Natalie, trying to help her and encourage her. And so those are the kind of people we have been working with. So we are trying to weave a relational fabric with people outside of the church. And those are the friends, not yet believers. And we have all kind of group activities where Christians and unbelievers are mixed to bridge the cultural gap we are talking about. We cannot see here very well, but we use the gospel concerts. People love music, and they love also gospel music. And yet, the words are in English, so we would just translate and show the translation on the screen, and they would give their testimony. And this man here, what's his name again? Wayne is, he was one of the singers, and Wayne was had stage 4 terminal disease, some kind of cancer, but he was still feeling fairly well, so he chose to come and spend his last months to share the gospel in music. And he told the people there, you know, to those French people, we had like concerts there. We had about 100 people there. He told them, you know, he said that I put my trust in God. He became the master of my life. And I was a drunkard before knowing Christ. But, you know, I know that in a few months I may die. But I came to you today to tell you that God loves you. And so that's a very good way to share, you know, about Christ and about the gospel in a very creative way. We had also, we don't see it very well here, a lot of different pictures, but we had like Thanksgiving dinner. The French people love to eat, as you know, but they love history as well. And so they are quite curious about, you know, this festival, Thanksgiving. And so we put up this this evening, and we explain, you know, how in several centuries ago, a number of believers in Europe were persecuted. And so they came to America and they founded colonies and they started to cultivate the land, and then it produced fruits, and then they at this big festival to give thanks to God. And that also was a very good way to present the gospel and the message of the gospel. This brother, you can see this brother here with a big hat. That's Abraham Lincoln. It's a brother. We gave him a hat, and he's reading the Abraham Lincoln proclamation. And I don't know if you remember what he says in that proclamation, but it's really a good way. I mean, it's a message of the gospel is there. And so we baptize new believers. Benjamin is one that I baptized. Benjamin is a banker. He works in a bank, actually. And I used to meet with him every Monday morning, and we would have a time of prayer. We would talk about whatever his week and how it has been, and then we would also go through a series of Bible studies presenting the elements of the faith. Benjamin, pray for Benjamin, his wife and his family. He's got four kids, Benjamin and Nicole. And those are the kind of people we try to disciple. And also this man here, Mathieu. Mathieu is also a very, very, very interesting guy because he was raised in a Christian family, in an assembly family. But when he was a teen, he said, "Mom and Dad, you know, I don't want any more of that stuff." So I think he was about 18 or 19, and so the dad says, "Well, you know, if you are living under my roof, you have to abide by my rules." But he says, "Well, no, I don't want it. I want to go on my own." So he left. He left home, and then he went on drugs and smoking pots and doing all kind of stuff. And one day he went to the forest and gathered up a bunch of mushrooms, and those are the psychedelic type of mushrooms. And then he decided that when he was very high, he wanted to go up to sleep up on a tree. So he did. He climbed in a tree, and then he fell. He fell, and he was tetraplegic. I mean, he was from the waist down, he couldn't walk anymore. But then he started to think about God again, and he met a very lovely wife from the brethren circles, and they fell in love, and he came back to God. But here's the kind of guy, you know, who came and came back to Jesus. By the way, what is a disciple? Disciples comes from the Greek peripates, someone who walks around. A disciple of Christ is a man or a woman who walks in the path of Christ. And discipleship takes a lot of time. If you would remember, this is a scale that shows how Jesus met his disciples and the apostles. It's almost a three-year journey from the first Passover to the fourth one, when he said, "Come and see," and a few came, the sons of Zebedee, and then he told two other disciples, "Follow me." Then he chose 12 to be with him. And finally, he told them, "I sent you." Actually, those are the four stages of discipleship. From simple spectator to believer, when he told to them, "Come and see," and this is the face of evangelism. And then the second phase is from believer to committed. Then he said to other disciples, "Follow me." Read this in Matthew 4. And Jesus spent a lot of time with his disciples to root them into his teaching. And then we read in Mark 3 that he appointed the 12 to be with him. I like that, because the disciple is somebody who is wants to spend time with his master. And Jesus takes them from committed to apprentice. And this is the equipping. And the last phase, we read this in John 20, 21, when he says, as the Father sent me, I also sent you, from apprentice to worker. This is the sending aspect. So this is the discipleship process that we try to do ourselves in church planting. And the disciple lives with his master and pursues his mission. And then we take the people from the hall to the living room. So what is the living room? The living room is a meeting place for specific groups. This is for our friends. The goal is to be acquainted with our guests and to give them a taste of community life. From the point of view of relationship, we want to foster informal relationships leading to deeper and more sincere relationships. And the message we want to communicate is I want you to be part of that family while discovering the Bible. So this is things that some of the things you want to do is we want to do interactive Bible studies with smaller groups, maybe 15 to 20 people maximum. We want to take them through a series of 5 sessions to discover the Bible, to discover who is man, what is man? Is man a sinner? Or who is God? Does God exist? And who is Jesus Christ? So this is a type of things we also do. And then the last place we want to take them is to the kitchen. The kitchen is a more intimate place. It's not for everybody right away, at least. This is at least for believers, in order to fellowship in the intimacy. And the intimacy and the authenticity of Christ. It's maybe in Act 2:42. This may be the Lord's Supper. The goal is to make disciples whose life will be more and more transformed and conformed to the character of Christ. And from the relationship point of view, this is the most intimate place of the three. And this is for the family, for smaller groups. And the message we want to communicate there is I want to grow in my faith with my brothers in the fellowship of Jesus Christ. So this could be house groups or cell groups. And so we have, in our small church, we had about 5 different prayer meetings in 5 different locations with different people. And you could call them also growth groups. The purpose of house group is to nurture the disciples. And we want to meet together in order to live together and authentic relationships in the fellowship of Christ. And it's quite important to bring the sense of responsibility to one another and to just teach what is mutual submission. It brings also a sense of belonging to the house of God and to the family of Christ. And it provides also an opportunity to minister to each other. And it's a very wonderful way to introduce people to help people to discover their own spiritual gifts and also to start putting them into practice. So we had all kind of activities, church weekends, and I want just to end and saying that spiritual maturity consists in growing in these three dimensions, loving God, but also loving the family of God, and also reaching out to the lost. And so the question we have and we ask ourselves is, what path do we wish our visitors to take through the entry hall and to the, through the living room and then to the kitchen? And what does that mean within the local church? And this is what we try to think about in the church planting process. Pray for the church in Pont de Beauvoisin. We have about 50 plus people. This picture has been taken in September. Not everybody is here. Maybe less than half of the group is here. But you may want to pray for those people there. And we won't be returning to this location. We'll still continue to follow them up. But we hope that the Lord will guide us to a new ministry, maybe a new church plant, and maybe with a team. But those things have not yet been set, and so you may want also to pray for that, that the Lord will show us specifically. We are thinking maybe going to this city or near the city of Chambéry. It's a capital city of a new region of Savoie. It's a beautiful city, but there are very few, just a few evangelical churches there. No assembly at all. So remember us, remember also our family. And there's Jonathan is here, and then Daniel. Jonathan is an engineer now in Roanoke. Daniel and Sarah here are both still in nursing. And Samuel, who is 27, will be married in February 21st with a girl from Charlotte, and he's working in computer science with programming. So think of us as a family, as a pray for our kids that they finish up especially for Daniel and Sarah. They know Jesus, but Daniel is not yet baptized. Sarah has been baptized, but still have a lot of questions about their lives. And pray for all of them. Thank you very much.